What's up, what's up, listeners? You're back on Conspiranormal with your host,
Adam Sane,
and your co-host, Luke Reed.
Luke Reed.
Well, what's going on, Luke? How you been, man?
I've been pretty good.
It's been about a week or so since we last spoke on Conspiranormal.
Right, yeah,
Not in true life, but...
Being broke, man, and it sucks, you know, and I'm not the only one. Everybody else is pretty much feeling the brunt of it, too.
We're about to go off the fiscal cliff, so, you know.
Yeah, whatever that
gonna
means.
What's going to happen? We're going to fall over.
Yeah.
So, I understand that you're drinking some good old Tennessee moonshine this
I got
weekend.
Some Mountain Dew straight from the foothills of Tennessee.
Right from the foothills of Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Spencer.
That stuff will knock you right on your butt.
Yeah, apparently. I had a little bit earlier.
Had a little sample.
A little sample. It was pretty strong, I gotta tell you.
Let's just say after about a pint the other night, I just passed out.
Well, I kind of noticed something because kind of listened to some of the older shows, and I just noticed how, like, it's kind of like the downward spiral of Luke. It starts out with you talking about, you know, partying and then losing your house and then living in your car. And then the DUI last week.
Right, yeah. it is a downward spiral. And, you know, I used to be a manager. Used to make pretty good money. Of course, I hated my job, so I still don't really regret leaving there that much. Being trapped inside all day, 10 to 7, 11 to 7 every day. Or
selling blinds.
Selling mini blinds, yeah. I mean, but, you know... Like I said, on the bright side, I still did have a couple days off a week, so it wasn't that bad, and I had enough money to do things all the time. Like, I had bought all my friends,
right,
all of the supplies to party and all of that, and I had money for nice clothes, and I had fine women around, you know, so.
Well, you know, that's kind of the downside of working. You got all that stuff, but you got to deal with the job.
Yeah, I mean, and it sucked, but... And money is important.
But you know, that's why I try to do something like this, you know. It makes you break up the monotony.
Right.
Should do something I'm at least, you know, passionate about. Chris is not here tonight. He had some other things that he had to go do. He's kinda gotta go look for a house to stay in.
He's kinda gotta go to Cragnackers.
Yeah, that's probably where he's going to end up. He's probably going to end up at the bar with his python. I just, you know, we had a great guest last week. And, you know, we didn't get too much time to talk about it. We got a little bit of time now. I just kind of wanted to get your ideas, some of the stuff that you seemed pretty impressed by our guest, Scotty Roberts, last week.
Yeah, he's great. And like I said on the last show, he makes the Bible so interesting, you know. I mean, not that it's not interesting on its own. It's just he gives you the context for everything. He gives you other scripture from surrounding cultures and stuff that also have relevance to the stories in the Bible that he's talking about, and you know, all the stuff about Moses and everything. I never read anything about Moses, so I had no clue. But I mean, yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, he has a theory, and you know, one of the things I was going to say is that I've often thought about how Moses, you know, because we know in the book of Exodus that he was raised in the Pharaoh's court. Of course, we don't get a lot of that. We don't hear a lot about it. It's just kind of mentioned, and then it fast forwards along. But you know, I've often wondered how much. You know, for the first at least 40 years of the guy's life, he was influenced by the Egyptian, ancient Egypt. So, you know, what the connections were with that, I've often wondered.
And something that I noticed is I was studying that pendant that Heather posted on Facebook that
Nobody
time.
Nobody knows who Heather is, but hello, Heather.
Yeah, right.
Because I know she's going to listen.
Yeah, she probably will listen. So she's kind of part of the show, too. But anyway... She posted a picture of like an appraisal pendant, and I went to look it up and then learned a little bit about masonry and the building of the temple, you know, and through the Mason perspective and talking about all the ritual things involved, and they have a heavy Egyptian influence in some of the stuff that I read talking about I can't even remember. I can't even remember now. I just remember one of the points I made
was that, you know, it seems like the Ark of the Covenant seems like something that was that is taken from an ancient Egyptian motif. There's been some carvings that were done in Egypt that look to things very similar to the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
So it was a very interesting interview. I'm hope we're going to have him back on when he gets the Reptilian book out, which I think will be interesting. I think we kind of covered some of that. We didn't cover as much Nephilim as I thought we were going to.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how the show is.
We always stray off topic.
Yeah, we stray off topic all the time. Yeah. That's how the show is. You know, we get to, we just get to talking about certain things. And, you know, I let the guest go ahead and just talk about basically what they want to talk about.
Take it away.
Yeah. And that's kind of the point. It's a conversational style, and to hear the guests speak, because nobody wants to hear us speak. We just got to face it.
Yeah, yeah. We have interesting things to say sometimes.
Right. But I think it's kind of, you know, I want to talk about, after the guest is over, just kind of briefly, kind of briefly tonight, kind of look at, you know, who we'd had on before. And not, but just necessarily anything that you, so be thinking about anything that you found particularly interesting through the course of the show over the last year that we've been doing it. We've been doing it since, I believe, March.
Yeah.
And, you know, from Dr. Future on, anything that you found interesting, anything that anybody said you found interesting, just be thinking about that. We'll talk about that briefly at the end. But tonight we're going to have on... a gentleman that is a good friend of Dr. Future, who was our first guest. He was actually Dr. Future's 7th grade math teacher, I believe. And he's coming on. His name is Robert Hyde, and he's someone that's got a lot of interesting ideas. And I think that he, in some ways, is kind of like Scotty Roberts, in that he is... you know, is of Christian bent, but he kind of follows how he thinks, that he thinks that everything through instead of just kind of accepting everything.
Yeah.
So
blind acceptance.
I think that will be, I think this will be an interesting interview. So if there's anything you want to add, we'll just go on to the guests.
Yep. Let's get to it.
All right. Let's go on to Mr. Robert Hyde, and we'll be back on Conspiranormal. Okay, we are back on Conspiranormal. This is your host, Adam Sane.
Co-host. You already know who I am.
Luke Reed. All right. Well, we have on the line Mr. Robert Hyde. He is a good friend of mine and also a very good friend of Dr. Future's. And as I mentioned before, he was Dr. Future's, I believe, 7th grade math teacher, I believe, Robert?
Yeah, something like that. Well, no, actually, I had him first, I guess, in 9th grade. Algebra. Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you and he go way back.
That's right.
So, Robert, I just want to kind of start off with you telling the audience about who you are, kind of your background, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Okay. I've been a teacher about half my life, taught in both private and public schools, mostly at the high school level. Occasionally at the college or the junior high level. Lots of math, lots of history, a variety of other subjects, you know, as the opportunity arises. Done some study in the Bible, and so that's what I've done about half my life. The other half of my life I've spent either being a student or being a computer programmer or running a family business, that sort of thing. So I've bounced around a little bit here and there, nothing real special.
Robert, you are, I would say, kind of the mufti of the Futurian clan, as fans of Futurequake, such as I am.
I kind of like that. I'm not sure I deserve it, but yeah, that's kind of what I am.
Well, I remember you saying in Branson one time when we were there that you looked like a mufti, so...
Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, I just wanted to bring you on tonight. You know, kind of we're finishing out the year here because this will be our last show before the new year. And I just wanted to kind of bring you on because I consider you someone that has a great deal of wisdom. Mm-hmm. And that knows a lot about history and the Bible, about you know, kind of the human condition in a way, and also the government of the United States, and how some of the things that are going on now today, how that affects Christianity. Uh-huh. And I kind of wanted to get your feelings about everything that's kind of going on now. I know that you and Dr. Future, you guys started going out to the, you believe you went to one of the conferences with Alex Jones,
right?
The 9/11 yeah, really Truth Conference.
Can I read your mind here a little bit?
Yeah.
I'm going to read your mind and say probably somewhere here you're going to want me to do some kind of a year-end prediction thing, aren't you?
Yeah, it's at some point.
I don't know if I'm ready for that, but I just thought I'd test out my powers here.
Yeah.
See if I've read you right.
Well, I believe that there's somewhat, you know, as Dr. Future and I, we've had many conversations, and you are someone that I believe kind of went on the journey with him as far as looking at things that our government has done. That our intelligence agencies have done, and how some of those things are not really accepted by the mainstream as being factual or true.
Right.
And I just want to kind of like get an idea of kind of your own personal journey on with that.
Okay. You know, there's a lot of ways we could go with that. We could talk about... We could talk about the national security state and
right.
some things I've looked at there, or we could talk about conspiracies that have occurred, or we could talk about some kind of paranormal type of aspects. How do you want to go at this?
I'd say let's talk about kind of the conspiracy things first.
Okay.
Some of the things that you have studied, what stands out in your mind, and how it kind of relates to everything that's going on today, and also how the church, as someone that, as someone of the church, mm-hmm. how that you feel things like the police state, increased surveillance, false flag terror attacks, how the church either sweeps those under the rug or doesn't really like to speak to talk about them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, let's say it this way. I remember, you know, we can start at a classic point. I was about 13 years old when President Kennedy was shot in Dallas. And like anybody who will tell you, you remember exactly where you were, exactly what you were doing in those days. And I remember the whole run through of it. And I remember how we were all told, you know, the official story. And I remember how people questioned that a little bit at the beginning, but it all kind of got covered up with the Warren Commission. And essentially what the establishment did was they basically gave you the soothing cover story that it was a lone nut. And then they let it hang that maybe there was some kind of a little rumor that maybe the Russians had done it, you know, some Cuban agent, or, you know, maybe Oswald was paid by the Russians or something like that. But that was as far as it went.
Right.
And both of those things really are just, you know, two versions of the cover story. And I got interested. I never really let it totally rest. I was always interested in it because I loved current events. But it probably was, you know, might have been 15 years or so after that I really started kind of digging around in it, and some things got exposed. And I remember realizing that I knew that the press had lied to us. And this came back to me on something I was watching on YouTube just the other night. I can't remember, but who the author of the YouTube was, but he was showing how the press plants certain memes in your head when these stories unfold. And he was showing how they set the whole thing up on 9/11 and how they would just feed in these so-called expert reports or these man-in-the-street reports that would tell you that it was Osama bin Laden, that it was Muslim terrorists, you know, yada, 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 and how this was, you know, a total press feed, and you could tell that it was. And I remembered that that the very first press feed that came out of Dallas was that three shots were fired. That was the very first thing that came across Associated Press or UPI, whoever that famous reporter was, and they focused that thing on that it was three shots, not more, three shots, because that was necessary to box in, you know, that it was Lee Harvey Oswald. So I went back and thought about that, and I thought, you know, this idea that the press is working with somebody to feed us a line, that's really there. I really see that it's there. And so, at any rate, back in the 60s and 70s, when I was in high school and college, most of us who were conservative, you know, had a healthy disrespect for the press. We doubted that we were getting the full story from the press at any one time. But I have lived long enough now to see that that the problem is not just with the press. It goes into a problem in the church. And I don't know if I want to move into that quite yet, if you want to talk about the press a little bit more. But yeah, I definitely have some opinions on the subject.
It seems to me, too, you know, you mentioned the Kennedy assassination, and the press always seems to come out with the official story,
right?
Quite after the fact. And I've seen it now, all the things that I've studied, 9/11, Oklahoma City, and the Kennedy assassination was exactly the same way. And I had often wondered it. Of course, you know, I was born way after it, but...
Right.
You know,
how about Osama bin Laden getting killed? Nope. The raid on Osama bin Laden.
Right.
Right.
It was. It seems to me that the Kennedy assassination was much the same way, and I believe I told you this before, but there was a documentary on that is just shows. It doesn't have any narration. It just shows raw footage from the day of the assassination and a couple of days after. And one of the scenes that one of the films that they show is 30 minutes after the assassination. It's about roughly 30 to 40 minutes. There's this couple, and they're like two little boys, and they're in the Dallas newsroom, okay? And I believe that it's probably not too far to go from where Dealey Plaza, where they were, to the Dallas newsroom. And they're sitting there talking to the newscaster. And he's asking them, you know, where did you hear the shots coming from? And they say right there on the air, this goes over live on Dallas TV, oh, we heard it right behind us from the fence. 30 or 40 minutes after the assassination.
Right.
So the press, you know, definitely plays a role.
I think it's Fletcher Prouty, I'm not sure, that talks about the fact that the best information that you get about an event is in the first few minutes before the cover story can be fully put in place. I think that's true.
Absolutely.
Something that that got me thinking about just now is the incident in Florida where the guy got his face eaten off that was supposedly on bath salts. I don't know if there's really anything to it, but the first time I heard the news story, they were saying that the very first story said that he was on a new type of LSD. And then the second story that I was hearing was that he was on pills like Xanax or something. And then the third story that came out I heard was bath salts. So three different stories I heard.
that story changed like 3 or 4 different times.
Yeah.
Yep. Right.
But to go on kind of with the conspiracy thing, what in your mind kind of clinched it for you as far as like 9/11? What that there was something untowards going on there?
What clinched it to me about 9/11 was when Doc Future and I went out to Alec Jones's conference in 2006 in Los Angeles, because there we were presented with very firsthand information from guys who had studied it. Up until that time, it was just a suspicion or a theory in the back of my mind. All I knew is that something didn't add up. I remember on the day of 9/11, I was teaching school at that time, and we heard about it at school, and I got hold of a television and put it in my classroom, and we watched the coverage the whole day. And I remember at that time, I knew something was strange. I knew we had turned a corner, but yeah. I really couldn't put my finger on, you know, what had happened or have any kind of a theory as to what had gone down. And it really was a long time before I, you know, understood that there was plenty of evidence that 9/11 was an inside job, to which now, you know, there's no doubt in my mind. The only question is who was on the inside, and I don't know who that was.
Right, who it would have been.
Yeah, but it was an inside job. I just don't know who was in there.
Robert, how do you believe, as someone that has spent a good deal of his life in the church, how do you see that the church, that the normal everyday Christian, how do you see that they deal with those kind of things? Or do you think they just pretty much buy in on like kind of the mainstream propaganda?
You know, most of us are pretty average. In fact, all of us are pretty average. And we have other things to do in our lives besides, you know, watch the news and so forth. And so mostly, you know, people just kind of take it as it comes. Sure. They hear about things. They hear the story. They believe what they're told. It's nothing more sinister than that. And I would say that's a whole lot of what the phenomenon is. It's not even that the people are being, you know, willfully blind or anything like that. It's just they're preoccupied with their everyday life, and so, you know, this is like somewhere down on their priority list. But there's a second thing, and that is the church, in my view, and I'm speaking particularly about the American church. I don't know too much about what's going on in Europe, but the American church, and primarily the Protestant church, of which I know more than I do, you know, about the Roman Catholic. But the American Protestant church is predisposed to believe what their authorities tell them. And they believe, especially they like to believe, what the government tells them. And so there is a tendency, you know, the first, second, third choice is to believe whatever it is the government tells you. That's a standard American Protestant reaction. And so, yeah, I'd say that.
Just to kind of, you know, flesh that out a little bit, I believe one of the things that happens a lot is that kind of the right-wing evangelical support of war. You know, it seems to me that's kind of a base contradiction of kind of the root of Christianity, which is something that extols peace. You know, we seem to have this very evangelical attitude that war is somehow that we fight these just and proper wars.
Uh-huh.
And I just kind of would like to know kind of how you think that maybe the root of that would be.
Yeah, I've got a theory on that. I think one of the places where, you know, the Protestant tradition and Protestant theology has its roots in the Protestant Reformation, that kicked in roughly 500 years ago. And one of the things that that was a result of the Protestant Reformation was seeing Christian experience as more or less of an ethical experience, you know, of being the right people at the right time or doing the right things, however that might be. And there was a real downplay of anything that was, you know, what you might call offbeat. The Protestant Reformation was very strong on believing that it had to have the answers to everything. And they really felt like they did. And so their idea was that they understood about governing authorities and that the first and last word is, you know, you're just supposed to do whatever the governor tells you. And that kind of settled it. And they put this all in a kind of a legal and moral framework that was satisfying. But the Bible, when I read it, tells me that, although, yeah, that's nice stuff, the Bible doesn't put rose-colored glasses on it. It tells me that, by and large, the world is run by evil powers. And so you kind of got to watch out for these guys. And you need to be on your guard. And yet sometimes you do what they tell you, you know, for safety's sake or, you know, or whatever. But this doesn't mean that these guys are good guys. It doesn't mean that they're trustworthy guys. It means you have to figure out some way of getting along with them. And that's quite a different mindset than just being gullible all the time and saying, well, whatever they tell me to do, I got to do it.
Right.
That's one place where I'd start.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have lost your train of thought a little bit there, Adam.
Oh,
so
no problem. No, I just wanted to... you know, it seems like when we get into a war, we seem to have this idea in this country that we're always on the right side. That there's nothing that we do that is wrong. And let me revise that a little bit, because I think Vietnam, we started to kind of see that, you know, the government and the military wasn't exactly taking us down the right road. But it seems that we have gotten away from that in the last, let's say, 40 years, to where now we seem to have, even with the war in Afghanistan that seemingly draws on and on and on and on, it seems that we still have this idea, especially in the evangelical base, of that we should support the war, we should support our troops and all that kind of thing. But there's no real questioning of why that we're over there, are, you know, what's going on that made us be over there. It's just like things seem to exist in a vacuum.
Yeah. What do you make of that?
I make of it that people just don't understand history.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I see, as far as if we're talking specifically about kind of the right wing, you know, evangelical, normal person out there, as you said before, they don't necessarily follow the news as maybe as much as they probably should, because they do have to deal, everybody does have to deal with life. But, you know, I think that maybe people just don't look at why. And as someone that, like me, you know, being so into history, people seem to deny that there was, you know, something historical going on that caused us to be over there.
Yeah.
Are there reasons for it?
It seems like to me, too, the negativity of the truth often is too much for a lot of people
to handle.
So they turn to just choose, they choose to turn the other way.
Right. Yeah. You know, if you go back and study the Protestant Church in America historically, there has always been an anti-war contingent, and there has been a pro-war contingent, and they exist side by side. But over the course of history, they tend, you know, every generation or so, they kind of divide off. And if you're kind of a peace-oriented type of person, you will join some little offshoot group. You might become a Quaker. You might become a Mennonite. You might become an Amish. You might become a Jehovah's Witness. You might go off in that direction. And if you tend to be more pro-war and you're pro-status quo, then you stay, you know, in a status quo church. And so what this means is that if you and I attend or we grew up in a status quo type of church, we're going to just naturally be around people that they're good with war. For whatever reason, they've rationalized it in their own mind and, you know, they've made their decisions and they can't see, you know, too much wrong with war, especially if you can do it in the other guy's backyard, you know?
Yeah.
So that's just the mentality. It's a drift. You know, I hate to say it. That's such a prosaic explanation, but it really is. It seems to me like that's what goes on.
Well, it seems that we, you know, appeals to God have been made so much in our wars and history. For instance, Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Right.
You know, these things that just, you know, we're going to destroy our enemy with the faith of with our faith in God. Praise mm-hmm. the Lord, pass the ammunition.
Right.
And I think especially since the 1980s with the rise of the kind of the, when the Republican Party really started to, you know, kind of co-opt the evangelicals as a way to right. get elected. And mm-hmm. then it just culminated under Bush, under, right. you know, the second Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And to where that, you know, because Bush was a Christian, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden it was okay what he was doing. And of course you had phrases out there that were bandied around like crusade and these kind of things. And it just seemed like people just, you know, that they just couldn't see beyond their political viewpoint as well as to what was really going on over, you know, in Iraq or in Afghanistan and what we were doing over there.
Yeah, I see it that way too. I don't know where we go with all that. You know, I talk to people who are, oh, let's say over the age of 40, and they've been Christians for a long time.
Yeah.
They have so much emotional investment in their past and their support of war and so forth. I think it's very difficult for them to do any kind of fresh thinking. People that are younger, you know, anybody who is like 30 or younger, maybe even 35 or younger, they're much more open and probably more aware, and they've got a little bit higher energy level, and they still got a good level of curiosity, and they're still asking questions, and they will reexamine things. But
plus, Robert, I think in some of the evangelical leadership, some of the older guy, the older guard, if you want to call it that, there's still this Cold War mentality.
Mm-hmm.
There's still this very much that, you know, even though the Soviet Union has been gone for 20 years,
right.
We still need to go defeat the godless communists.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been just translated over to the godless terrorists. You know, instead of Muslim, instead of communists, it's Islamo-fascists.
Yeah, you know, don't you like that term?
Yeah, as it's the coin is termed, yeah. And so there's a lot of that still hanging around in that old guard of that kind of Cold War mentality.
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting to me is these guys with this old Cold War mentality don't realize how crazy they were even then.
Yeah.
What I mean is this. if you go back and study it out, you will find that Eisenhower, who was famously a coal warrior,
right,
was working very hard to reduce the arms race, and he was working very hard to come to terms with the Soviet Union, because he knew that a lot of the propaganda that we were getting was propaganda, and he knew that the Soviet Union was not the threat that it was made out to be. And he was fighting the military-industrial complex. And when you go to his successor, John Kennedy, you find that John Kennedy, probably from the very beginning, actually, but at any rate, a year or two into his presidency, he was really making efforts to come to terms with the Soviet Union. And this was not a betrayal. It wasn't like, we're going to give up, land or anything like this. It was that they actually knew that there was a way to get through to the Soviet leadership, and there was a way to get through behind them to the Russian people, and that they could reduce tensions and reduce the risk of war. But these guys were treated like, they were some kind of practically traitors, anybody who believed in peaceful coexistence was just naive and so forth.
Right.
And moving it up to, when I was more politically aware in the Reagan days, Republicans do not like to admit, but William Buckley does admit, that Reagan went into office with the intention of stopping a nuclear war. He had no intention of pushing any buttons. He thought it was terrible that the president was supposed to react on command and push the button and kill 50, 100 million people on somebody's say-so. And so he was working all through his administration. His idea of peace through strength really was, it was a high principle. He was trying to reduce nuclear tensions, and he did succeed. But the Republican establishment and the military-industrial complex never picked that up from Reagan, and neither did the church. And this is interesting to me, because it tells me, wow, we really have this pro-war mentality, amongst Christian people. So, wow, it's tough.
Yeah, it's difficult to get your head around, and I think some of the reason that some people reject the church or leave the church, I think has a lot of reasons to do with some of those attitudes.
And you know what I would say? I would say absolutely, absolutely leave the church. Leave it. It's not gonna change. If you know Jesus before you leave the church, you're going to know Jesus after you leave the church, right?
Right.
Right? I mean, the church is a nice place for folks to get together if it's a nice place for folks to get together. But what's that got to do with Jesus? Very little. So, yeah. And I would also say, if somebody's, is looking for a spiritual experience, they're looking, they're trying to find out some things. Is Jesus real? Can you get in touch with him and so forth? Oh, man, the church is the last place you ought to go. Church is the last place.
That's very interesting.
I'd have to agree.
Any feedback on there, Luke?
Yeah, Luke, what do you think?
I'd have to totally agree. If our listeners who've heard our past shows know that I condone psychedelics pretty heavily.
Uh-huh.
Including marijuana. I wouldn't really call that a psychedelic, but as gateways to kind of open your mind to not necessarily a higher ascended form of thinking, but just a different way of thinking.
Yeah, I hear you.
And that to me, along with I did some research on ayahuasca after Dr. Future was talking to us about it, and that seems like something I'd really love to try, because that seems more like a
Hey, have you run by Doc Future yet?
I don't think he's told Dr. Future that.
Okay, no.
If Dr. Future is listening in on this podcast, so your cover's blown, but go ahead.
He kind of had the opposite effect by telling me all that than what he was going for.
Luke is speaking solely for himself, Robert. I know that.
Yeah. I didn't say that he actually condoned it, but, you know, he got me interested in it anyway, and I did some more research on it.
I love it. That's great.
Backfired.
But yeah, like I said, a different way of thinking. And to me, to get a spiritual experience, that would be the best way to do it and the best place to start. As my brother put it, you know, he did a few years of research. He's been on the show too, and he experimented with shrooms and stuff like that. And he says that it kind of advances the amount of meditation that it would take to get your mind to the same status, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, but I'd like for you to explain it a little bit. Let me, and I'll lay just one card on the table of mine. You know, I've never smoked marijuana, and I don't, you know, do any of that kind of good stuff, but I really do enjoy smoking a pipe of tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that it is certainly a mood altering substance. It allows me to think more slowly, you know, and as long as I'm sitting in a chair or just relaxing where I can do that, it allows me to think more slowly. It allows me to take the time to form my thoughts better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that has been my experience. Somebody says, well, you know, it's a mood altering drug. I say, yeah, you know, all foods alter your moods one way or the other. But yeah, I agree, it is. But I would be curious, you know, if you could give me some details about your, you know, your thoughts on how, you know, your moods or your thoughts are altered or improved.
Well, I'm sure you know about the different types of brain waves, the alpha, beta, theta brain waves.
Right.
And I believe that it's theta is the calmed, relaxed state of thinking.
I think that's right.
And so it sounds like to me that not only the nicotine, but other things in the tobacco chemically, I don't know. But, you know, are causing your brain to kind of move into that theta stage and give mm-hmm. you a more relaxed state of thinking. And marijuana is just a little bit more potent.
Uh-huh.
I have a different reaction with it than a lot of other people. It's really strange, but, you know, I've been using it since I was about 14, 15 years old. And at my last house that I was living in, I would have some get-togethers and stuff, and we'd all be sitting around smoking, and a lot of other people, it was a downer for them. They would just, you know, stare at the floor, and they wouldn't talk very much and all of this, and my mind was exploding with creative thoughts and patterns and colors and just all of these just crazy ideas and interest in everything. And then, you know, further, and then I researched a little bit more about the mind and how it works and everything, and then realized that that may have to do with myself having a little bit of a negative dopamine release than most other people.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Let's you know, this is a conspiranormal show, right? So
right.
We can go some ways. Do you think, you know, in your experience so far or in your conversations with people, do you believe that you're having an internal mental experience, or are you able to have some kind of flow with external entities? Is this purely an internal, you know, I don't want to use the word imaginary, because
right.
that has the wrong connotations, because it could be very real. But
yeah.
Is this basically an internal experience, or do you feel like you're connecting with something outside or beyond yourself?
I would have to ride the fence on that. I can't really say either black or white, because in this case it is both.
Uh-huh.
In my mind, I kind of see the world to be esoteric anyway. Like the most uh-huh. of the things, most of the things I look at in nature, you trees, rocks, just whatever I see, buildings, I always kind of have this other viewpoint that is always esoteric in the things that I look at. So I'm constantly analyzing it from that perspective as well, as just the practical, logical perspective. I think he went out.
Robert?
You there?
Yeah.
We lost you there.
Yeah, we lost you for a second.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I was asking.
It was the NSA again. They do this all the time.
It's legal. It's legal in Washington, but it isn't in Kentucky and Tennessee. Yet,
that's
you know?
Right.
There we go.
It's always when Luke's talking about drugs too.
I know. You can tell. You know, we're checking their reaction time. You know, I mean, we can all play this game, right? You know, it's like, you know, if they're watching us, we're watching them, right?
That's right.
So I was asking Luke the question if he could give a little detail on possibly the alterations of consciousness that he experiences, what he's picked up from it, specifically as he would care to be.
Right. Yeah. And I was saying that I had to give some backstory on kind of the way that I perceived the world in the first place. And,
right.
And that's where I was saying that I kind of look at everything from mm-hmm. constantly analyzing it from a spiritual perspective as well as just practical, logical, mm-hmm. everyday things. So, the weed is something that I wouldn't even consider a drug. I just consider it kind of a social. It gives me a boost, you know. It gives me a creative All right. boost mainly, more than anything. A creative high.
All right.
And you know, I'm not averse to trying something like shrooms or, like I said, ayahuasca or DMT in the future, just under careful, you know, careful. Just to be careful with it. Supervision. Yeah. It always helps to have someone there with you, making sure everything goes okay, and to do your research ahead of time. And I think that it's safe.
Don't necessarily get into it while you're flying a plane or something.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Well, since we're on the topic of spiritual things, one of the things we talk about a lot, Robert, and I kind of want to cover this before we go into kind of a more broader approach, but one of the things that we have talked about a lot on this show, we've had a couple of guys that, one's named Bill Bean, another gentleman named Tim Yancey, they have had extreme haunting experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not just talking about like something going bump in the night. We're talking about like
slammed against
walls. Yeah, slammed against walls. Some serious, serious psychological harassment.
Apparitions.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had, we've also had the Tennessee Wraith Chasers on that are a ghost hunting group here that are actually, they're actually Christian guys. And one of the things we've talked about a lot is ghosts.
All right.
And, you know, possibly, you know, being also demonic hauntings, too.
Mm-hmm.
You have an interesting take, I think, about ghosts. Like, you don't preclude the possibility. Could you kind of go into a little bit of that?
Yeah. I've never seen a ghost that I know of, but I have felt the presence of people who have gone on.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in terms of my own personal experience, you know, it's limited, but I believe that it is real. One of the things that has helped me in this is what I would call Anglican theology. And I may be overstepping myself here. You know, might be some Anglican listening to this and say, no. but I don't mean it in an ugly way. But I have noticed that among some Anglican writers, and I'm thinking of Charles Williams and C.S. Lewis and J.B. Phillips, these guys understand some things about how people pass from this life to the next, and the existence of discarnated spirits that are not in, you know, what a Protestant at least would call heaven, and they're not in what a Protestant at least would call hell. Sure. They're somewhere, and they're really there. And I was really encouraged when I read that, And then I started reading back through Christian history. And, you know, throughout most of Christian history, there's been a whole lot more of an awareness of all kinds of spiritual things, whether you're talking about afterlife, or you're talking about hauntings and ghosts, or you're talking about angels or devils or powers or things like that. We live in a time when a lot of that's been shut down. It's been shut down for a couple of reasons. Scientifically, modern science has gone in a very materialistic way. Modern science in general tries to deny any kind of non-material existence. If you can, you know, if you can weigh it, it is real.
Right. Kind of the scientific approach. Hello? Oh, we lost him again.
The idea that there would be something that is neutral.
Or hey, Robert, we lost you for a little bit. Again.
Gosh, I wonder what the story is.
I don't know.
And the NSA, they don't want us just talking about drugs. They don't want us talking about the afterlife or anything, do they?
Yeah, no, I don't think they do.
They're hackers. They're working on shutting you down.
Yeah. Well, you know, tell me where I left off.
You started talking about the kind of the Anglican perspective.
Yeah, did I get through to C.S. Lewis and so forth?
You did get through C.S. Lewis.
Okay, and the fact that they're open to the idea that both good and neutral aspects of spirituality exist. You know,
right.
You know, there really are ghosts and angels and departed spirits, and you know, and this is not a bad thing. It's just the fact of life. And but that is when you start talking like that, boy, you're really up against it if you're talking in typical American Protestant Christian community. They would go, whoa, you know, you're talking about the occult. That would be the immediate would be the immediate thing. So yeah.
One of the things that we you and I were at a conference together.
Yes.
And we went to see this person speak at this conference.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we didn't plan to go in there together, but you were there.
Mm-hmm.
And this person had was talking about the rise in ghost hunting, popularity, ghost hunting shows. And his whole premise was just that everything was demonic. There was nothing, there was just no line in the sand there.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything that was in that supernatural realm was basically demonic.
Yeah.
I remember you walking out of there. And I stayed, and during the question and answer session, this lady is talking about this 15-year-old girl at her church, and she says that the girl's mother had passed away. Okay. And the girl had apparently been having these experiences where she was seeing her mother.
Uh-huh.
What those experiences were, I couldn't tell you because they didn't go too far or deep into that.
Mm-hmm.
Then the lady proceeds to say that they were trying to tell her it was all demonic. And I just really felt, I can tell you, I felt really bad for that girl, because uh-huh. here's this girl who lost her mother.
Uh-huh.
A traumatic experience. She's trying to deal with it the best way she can.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got the people at her church that are trying to comfort her when she tells them these stories that are there, supposed to be there to comfort her, are right. telling her, well, it's just a demon.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, this like seems to be the...
Like they know what they're talking about.
Yeah. This mm-hmm. seems to be not just something that's in... specific to that case, mm-hmm. but it seems to be a wide-ranging issue of just to look at things and say, oh, it's just demonic.
Right. Yeah. It's absolutely a theological prejudice. You know, I don't necessarily want to get into theology really heavily here, but but I might as well. You know, essentially, what you have after the Protestant Reformation is a drift back to people really did not believe in the activity of the Holy Spirit. Okay, the way they resolved the Holy Spirit was they said, "Well, yeah, He is present between the covers of your Bible," and that's about as spiritual as it gets. And they don't really want to talk about anything spiritual. But if you do talk about something spiritual, the definite presumption is it must be evil. Yeah. There cannot be anything neutral or good about it.
Robert, do you believe that that's something that comes from the Puritan
background? Yeah. It didn't start with them. You know, they picked up on an idea, but they made matters worse. Yeah, I think so.
I want to say this, and we could kind of swap in emails back and forth with this, you know, to get ready for this podcast. And you'd written this, which I thought was very profound.
Hey, that's me. Well, that's my email.
And I kind of want you to, if you could, to kind of expound on it. Because I'm very curious. You said, you know, I'd also like to raise the subject of why most Christians, and especially evangelical types, avoid serious study of the supernatural at all, and how this plays into the ignorance and confusion that we're facing today, and why what they like to call spiritual warfare, that's in quotations, is going to pass from their hands.
Yeah, I know what I was thinking about that. I was sitting on a park bench with a young guy. He was kind of a drifter sort of guy, and we were having a great conversation. And I was reading a good book, and he was reading a good book. And his book was subtitled something: "What Science Says About the Afterlife." And yeah. He was not a Christian or anything, just a kind of nice guy. And I asked him, you know, what he was reading, and he told me. He said, "I really like this book." He says, "I'm reading it for the second time." And so I just popped the question. I said, "Have you had any personal experiences of the afterlife?" And he says, "No, he hasn't." And I said, "Well, I have. Would you like to hear a few?" You know, because I just decided I'd make a little conversation there. And so I got him talking, and it turns out, you know, that his no, he hadn't had an experience, was just a polite no. It was a "you go first" type of no. Sure. And because he had had an experience, he had had an experience of where his father, whom he had not met, he hadn't seen him for 10 years, and he was estranged from his father. When he was a teenager, he had the experience that his father appeared to him in a dream at night and told him he was leaving. And gave him, you know, some instructional words, you know, told him some things, and that was the dream. And he kind of thought maybe his father had died, and 2 days later he found out that he had, and that was the day in which his father had died. So, you know, here you go with a story about, you know, let's talk about the afterlife. You know, people do have experiences one way or the other. But I noticed at the time, I thought, now, I could get into a conversation with this guy about the afterlife real naturally, but I could never do that in an ordinary Bible-believing church service. I couldn't get into that. Probably couldn't get into that very easily in like a Sunday school class or any kind of an official churchy type of thing, because, you know, and I bet you couldn't either. Let's just say it would be difficult, wouldn't it? It would be difficult.
Yeah, well, Dr. Future and Tom Bonnet go to my church, so I don't know.
Well, you got an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but there is, I think there is a theological reason, and I hate to say this, but, you know, let's just get it out in the open. The church has really taught that there is a total parting of the ways at the moment of death, and that some people go to a really great everlasting heaven, and some people go straight to a real terrible everlasting hell. And usually, you know, because people are trying to win souls for Christ and so forth, they will really emphasize, you know, the horrors and the pains of hell, which I'm not trying to, you know, unsay or anything, but they really get vivid about that. And nobody really talks too much about heaven and or any other place or anything. And so people have this vivid consciousness about hell. It's easy to imagine, you know, hot burning fire and striking matches and all that kind of stuff. And and on the other hand, you know, these people have been taught a theology which says, you know, well, some people are chosen and most people are not, and there's a narrow way and there's a broad way. And so they start doing the math and they start saying, well, you know, if, you know, only 10% of the people are saved or something like that, or 5% or whatever and all that, you know, then chances are, you know, down deep inside, you know, I might be going to hell at the end of all this anyway. So with that kind of idea in people's minds, they have a strong subconscious urge not to talk about the afterlife.
Yeah. Interesting.
Really.
And the spiritual warfare that you mentioned, that how the evangelical church is going to pass from their hands.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean by that?
It's going to, people who deny experience, when experiences are happening, their control, their participation is going to pass from their hands to the people who are actually exploring and having experiences that contradict what they think. That's really what I mean. Yeah. In other words, if you have certain specific experiences, okay, again, you know for a fact that certain things are true, then somebody else comes and denies that, you're just not going to listen to them.
Right.
And I guess what I'm really hinting at is I think among young people, both people who are already Christians and people who are not yet, you know, or people who may be a long time, if they are willing to explore these areas, they will find some things. They will find some interesting things. They'll begin to develop some experience. They'll begin to develop some understanding and knowledge. They'll begin to know what it is they're talking about and what they're interested in. And the conversation will pass into their hands.
Right. It's kind of an empowerment of the young.
Yes. Way.
It goes back to mm-hmm. what we were saying.
Right.
Kind of how there is a divide.
Yes.
Between kind of that old Cold War evangelical Christianity and the younger people that are, you know, I think much more spiritually based.
Right.
Robert, I'd love to ask you about your own personal experiences, like the supernatural things that have happened to you.
I don't know. maybe we'll have to have a second session on that. I'll think about that a little
okay.
bit. Okay. I'll give you this much. In my own personal conversion experiences, and even before I was converted, I had some extremely strong sense of intuition and awareness at those times. I would go back and say I had some key awarenesses as early as about the age of 4 or 5, and you know, I won't push that too far. A lot of my experience is secondhand. I've met a lot of people because I've been a teacher and a pastor for a long time. And so people tend to tell you their stories a little bit. And you can judge of people and what their stories are. And, you know, people have shared some things with me that, you know, make it clear some things are going on. But I won't get into the details there except to say I am very confident, you know, that there is a lot of interesting, fascinating, and beneficial spiritual experience to be had. And a lot of people are avoiding that, which I think is a shame.
Yeah, I do too. I think the church, we spoke about this with Bill Bean, who you actually got the opportunity to meet up there in Louisville.
Right.
And he has some of the same things that he went through. The horrible experience that he went through, and later on kind of getting into the whole UFO phenomenon too, to where he feels that, you know, now that's a demonic thing. He gets that kind of it doesn't really speak too much in churches, because it seems that he's not as well accepted in the church that he would go to. But he will be speaking at these paranormal conferences where you got, you know, ghost hunters and people, you know, doing tarot card readings and psychics all around and aura. Mm-hmm. You know, you were there. You saw what was going on.
Sure.
But it seems like, so it seems just to me, this is so odd that the church denies, just kind of sweeps that under the rug, so to speak. When, if you read the Gospels, Jesus is casting demons left and right. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of spiritual stuff going on.
Right.
But, you know, here's someone like Bill Bean, he goes to this, and, you know, he's more accepted in that paranormal community than he is in the community that he really wants to be, he really is a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, hey, that reminds me, you know, now you just brought up that three-letter word, UFO.
Yeah.
And that is something that, you know, I would love to talk to you a little bit about in some future program, because I think that's something that is related somewhat. I don't want to say real closely related, but it is related somewhat. And it's worth a lot of exploration. And I know, you know, Doc Future has done some research in that area himself.
Well, we got some time, Robert. If you want to talk about it, we can kind of touch on it a little bit.
No, I'm trying to get you to invite me to come back on your show.
I got you. So we can do the UFO and all the supernatural, more supernatural stuff. Look, is there anything that you want to ask?
I did have a question a minute ago.
Okay.
And I forgot what it is, so go ahead until I think about it.
Okay.
Well, Robert, we talked a little bit about, or we kind of mentioned the police state a little earlier. Uh-huh. And I know that's something that you've spoken about before. And I feel like myself that's something that's, you know, but people say, you know, I hear Alex Jones or some other conspiracy people talk about, well, we're going into a police state. We're going into, you know, full-scale tyranny. And to me, I feel like we're already there.
Yeah. I'm somewhere between you and Alex on that. Yeah, I think we are already there. I think we've been there for quite a while, but I think he's right. It is going to get worse. And I was just thinking, you know, one of the things that concerns me is we have no mental defenses against it. Yeah. As an American people, I was reading something by Richard Feynman, the Nobel Prize winning physicist, and you know, he was totally a mathematical, science, physics oriented guy, to the point that he absolutely found no place for religion. He found no place for spirituality. He found no place for miracles, anything like that. But at the end of his life, he says he was worried about the fact, the possibility of thought control.
Yeah.
And he capitalized those words. I mean, he really meant that as a concept, a distinct concept, and he was afraid that we were moving in the direction of thought control. And I'm thinking, very good. I'm glad that you are aware of this. You know, and, you know, he had been the victim, actually, of some manipulation and thought control when he was a grad student. So I was glad he noticed that. However, you know, given his scientific paradigm, there is really no deep understanding even of what thought is. There is not a deep understanding of control, of what thought control would be. And so if you don't really know what thought control is or why it would be bad, how are you going to have any kind of defenses up against it? And it was like, man, it's pretty late for you to start thinking about that kind of stuff. And I feel like in this country, we don't have our defenses up against thought control. We just don't think about it. It just, you know, we think, well, you know, I'm going to watch what's on TV tonight. I'm going to watch the game. I'm going to watch the movies. I'm going to, you know, do whatever. So what do I need to worry about thought control? And you're going, do you realize what you're doing? Do you understand why you're doing it? You know, they've got you, you know, they're appealing to something in you. And anyway, that's what I think about thought control. I think we have no defenses, really, no mental defenses against the police state. Okay? Go ahead.
I mentioned on here before, Adam, about the documentary I was watching about the magnetic experiments with the helmets they were putting on the subject's head and changing the course of their emotions and stuff.
Yeah, I think you...
Did I mention that?
Maybe. Possibly.
Tell me a little bit about it, Luke.
Well, I was flipping through channels one night and come across this documentary. It was scientists researching the magnetic influence on the brain, electromagnetic, and they had these special helmets that they made up for all of these different controlled test subjects in their laboratory, and they were putting the helmets on them. Well, first of all, they were testing their morality on these quizzes that had questions about, you know, if you found money on the street, would you pick it up and try to find who it belonged to, or would you keep it? Just simple questions about morality like that, you know. And you lost him.
We lost him again?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah. We got cut off right at the point where Luke was saying... he was talking about how they would ask them questions, and they might ask them a question like, if you saw money on the street, would you pick it up? And that's right at the point where it was cut off.
Right. Okay. So they're giving them these quizzes on morality at first, and all of them, they all choose to do the right thing on all of their questions for the most part. You know, they had about 10 different people that they were trying it on. And so... they gave him the same test again afterward with the electromagnetic helmet on, and it was just triggering the I guess it's the medulla of the brain. I'm not sure the exact center of the brain that it was sending like small electric shocks into, but I think that's right, the cerebrum or the medulla or something like that.
All right.
And so after they put the helmet on him, it coerced them to make the immoral decisions on the same quiz the second time. Well, I don't know, maybe it wasn't the same quiz, they mixed up the questions or something like that, or just switched the test out with different people. But the point is, the second time around, they did not score as well. So that just, to me, showed that they could use... you know, that specific technology had to be really close to your brain. It was a helmet that had to be, you know, an inch away from it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's a possibility that, you know, in the next few years, something broadcasted as an electromagnetic frequency is kind of a scary possibility.
Sure is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's basically what they did was they changed their morals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically what they did.
And all through electromagnetism.
Yeah.
This is kind of a silly question, but did they change them temporarily while the helmet was on, or did it have an after effect and started to affect them permanently? Do you know?
No, it didn't affect them permanently in the test. They only
while they were under the influence, in other words.
Right. They had to be they were all wearing the helmet when they took the test the second round.
Okay.
And when it was off, it just seemed to go back to normal.
Okay. Hadn't heard about that one.
I'm sure if I do a little bit of digging, I can find it and maybe give our listeners a link to it or something like that.
There's so much out there like that. One of the things that we've talked about, Robert, before is that we've talked about mind control.
Uh-huh.
Which is a subject that I find particularly interesting because I think there's a ton of it out there,
mm-hmm.
either active or passive.
Right.
And as you were talking about Richard Feynman and the kind of the thought control that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I really find it concerning, though, that people just kind of accept what is going on with, like, the police state mentality. You have a lot of police that seem to get, that are out there that seem to get away with a lot of different things and a lot of terrible things. So I think that people just kind of tend to accept that as being some kind of, as just being, that's just the way it is. It's never going to change.
Yeah. I've been wondering what can be done to help reverse that. I know, for example, there are a lot of good cops. There are a lot of good law enforcement people out there.
Yeah.
And so what seems to be happening is, they're slowly being drifted and marginalized, and they're seeing things moving in a direction that they themselves personally don't like and don't necessarily want to participate in. But I don't know exactly how that's going to be handled, except to say I think that individual people who are people, you know, with some energy and goodwill probably need to expend some of that in helping clean up the act of the people that are in their profession. It's like, you know, if I'm a teacher and I see issues in my teaching profession and with my fellow teachers, I probably need to be pretty forthright in addressing it.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, dealing with all the issues maybe in the wider world. And, you know, if we had some cops that had some really goodwill and they saw what's going on in their profession and start to speak up against it and tell these guys, you know, you guys are screwing it up for all of us. You're going to behave in such a way that the people are going to rebel against you. And, we're all going to be hurting for it. That's what's on my mind.
And on that note, Robert, just, you know, something to think about, about kind of where, you know, at the end of 2012 now, and we're going into, you know, Obama's second term. We got a lot of things about to happen, like the, you know, Obamacare is going to mm-hmm. kick in. We got this whole fiscal cliff thing that everybody's talking about right now as we record this on December 10th, 2012. As a nation, where do you think that, you know, and I posed this question to Andrew Hoffman as well when we had him on, where do you think that, you know, that we're going to be, say, like 10, 20 years?
Ooh, man, I don't know.
It's a big one.
I don't know, man. I don't know where we're going to be in 1 year. What did Andrew say?
He said that he seemed to think that things would gradually just kind of get worse. Mm-hmm. And that by, like, in 20 years that, you know, maybe the United States would kind of fall apart into, like, kind of different separate regions.
It's really hard to tell because a natural disaster or something like that, civil unrest, you know, things like that that are unexpected could happen and completely change the course.
Sure. Yeah. So
it's so hard to predict.
There's mm-hmm. always something that can happen.
Right. You know, you look at these guys who are controlling the situation, and, you know, let's just call them the controllers. They're there. That's what they do. And you start looking at the power that these guys wield, the physical power, and, you know, they control all kinds of, you know, energy spectra, like, you know, electromagnetism, radio, you know, particle beams, everything. And you start looking at the scope of their ability to produce disasters. It really has me wondering about some things. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Like, that's right up Luke's alley.
Yeah, you crossed into my territory there.
Luke, while we're getting ready for this next show that you're going to persuade Adam to get me on, you know, sometime in the next couple months.
Right.
Shouldn't be a problem.
Have you done any research on Fukushima?
No, I haven't. But as far as what you were just talking about, though, geoengineering and earthquake devices, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a heavy story. And I haven't, you know, I'm not near the bottom of it, but it's worth some digging and some research.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will do.
Is there anything good you want to add, Luke? Or?
Yeah, you were talking a minute ago about the policemen and their role and everything, and I've mm-hmm. got several friends who became cops, and they're going into it with a good heart, and mm-hmm. they want to genuinely clean up the streets from all of these things that are ruining people's lives, like the harder drugs, you know, like right. the synthetics and stuff, and you know, they're being pressured by their authorities to do something different, and eventually they get discouraged, and then they just become what they set out to do becomes completely diluted into something mm-hmm. else, you know. And as far as just like looking out for your neighbor and stuff like that, you can look at someone who's like less fortunate than you, or raised a different way, or, you know, raised completely wrong, and making all these terrible decisions for themselves, unhealthy, just destroying their mind and body, and instead of, you know, making fun and trying to raise yourself above them, we should be helping them.
I absolutely agree. You know, there is a real role for policemen, and you know, some of my libertarian friends don't think we should, you know, have police or something, or we should have private police. I strongly disagree with that. There's a real role for them to play in terms of helping a community, you know, take care of itself, to protect itself from its own problems, you know, things like petty thievery and so forth. But it needs to be handled by people who know each other and by people, you know, of goodwill. And it cannot be, we can't pass the control to strangers who do not have our best interests at heart. When you have these guys who have quotas, you know, they got to write so many tickets, they got to fill up the jails, you know, so that these private corporations can run the jails at a profit, all that right. kind of stuff. Man, we got a serious problem.
Yeah, we sure do. Especially with the private jail thing. That's to me, that's just, yeah, it really is a serious problem.
That's a problem that's just going to happen.
With people having to fill a quota of how many people you can put into jail. That's just a complete degradation of justice. Right. I really think that, you know, we were Luke and I were talking about drugs and the drug war before, you know, we started the podcast tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I really feel that the way that it's done is that one arm of the government, for lack of a better term, even though I don't feel like that's the best term to use, but for lack of a better term, the government, one arm brings the drugs in while another tries to force them out and enforce the draconian laws that we have.
It protects the distributors.
Yeah, and it acts as just another means to just assert more and more control over the populace.
Narco terrorism.
Right. That is correct. And you know the classic is to go back, you know, 180, 190 years and read up on the opium wars.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, that's classic. How these British families made their fortunes forcing the sale of their drugs on the Chinese. And that's how they got wealthy. And that's how they got their titles and nobility. And it's like, man, this has been going on for a long time.
And they were really no different from someone like Pablo Escobar.
Right.
In Colombia. You know, when he made his money and he for his town that he was in, he built churches, he built schools, he gave money to the poor.
Uh-huh. And
what did those guys do when they brought after making money with opium? Built churches. Mm-hmm. Built schools, be funny to the poor, had statues of themselves. That was probably the only difference. So, yeah, it's just a matter of who wins and who gets to write the history.
Right.
Well, Robert, we're almost out of time, but I really want to thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a lot of fun and pleasure, and it's a kind of a reminder of some times that we had with Doc Future. And
that's right.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
We'll have to get together soon. Maybe I'll bring Luke with me.
I'm down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Luke, look forward to talking to you.
You too. Absolutely. It's been a great show.
Well, we're gonna finish out here and just stay on the line for us, Robert. And
okay.
Luke, if you got nothing to add, we're going to call it and we'll be back.
Let's do it.
All right. We'll be right back on Conspiro Normal. One, two. All right, that's some nice flow there, Luke.
That was awful.
Anyway, so, what do you think of Robert Hyde?
He's awesome. Just like I said, I was telling you, when we stopped the last recording, he gave us the chance to give him some feedback and everything, and it was way more conversational. And I like that.
Liked it, huh?
Yeah, I like that. Nothing against the previous guests or anything, but just the fact that we were able to put in our two cents on everything too was pretty cool.
Sure. Yeah, it was a great give and take. I thought.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely have him back on. I definitely want to pick his brain about UFOs, and we'll get him to talk about his supernatural experiences. So,
have you already kind of heard a little precursor?
Some, okay. But not too much. More of a talk with Robert about politics and about kind of religion, kind of what we talked about tonight.
Yeah,
is more of what you know we've spoken about before, but I was happy to have him on. Thought he was a great guest for the end of the year. You know, he's of that same crowd, which, you know, Dr. Future, Tom Bonick, who's also been on our show, you know, Andrew Hoffman, who's been on our show. Those guys have just, you know, I've just thought in so many different ways about, you know, religion, spirituality, that there's a whole lot more to than just what we see on the surface,
right?
You know, yeah. So
and
you're saying basically like encourages you to think to multiple levels rather than just seeing what's on surface level.
To think about what you really exactly critical
and,
think
and
about
that,
what
and that's
reading.
What I that's what I really got from it too, because I was telling you throughout the course of the show I kind of started out to have more resentment toward Christianity and the Bible. You know, over the course of all of our shows, like, it's starting to be more of, like, a point of interest for me.
Yeah.
You know, and the Bible has a lot of historical facts, it seems. And when it's backed up...
There's a lot of history in it.
Yeah, and when it's backed up by, the text from surrounding cultures and stuff like that, it just gives it even more relevance and...
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, as you delve into it, it becomes a lot more interesting. And I think even if you're not a Christian...
There's still something to be gained from
it. Yeah, there's still something there to be gained from it. There's a lot of wisdom. Not, you know, just discounting it completely is just as closed-minded as the people that discount, you know, other ideas.
Right.
So... I think that's something we covered in tonight about kind of how the church is really reluctant to talk about spirituality,
mm-hmm.
Which, as I said before, is odd to me. But I can kind of understand it from a historical point of view of how that development has taken place, but. You know, okay, I just wanted to kind of, you know, a little bit before we go, we've had 19, this will be show number 19.
Mm-hmm.
We've had, I believe, we have a couple of shows without a guest, so we've had 17 guests. And I just wanted to ask you, just what guest kind of, or, you know, what idea kind of stood out to you?
Well, you know, I'm not going to be able to remember names.
Okay, no problem. if you tell me I'll probably tell you who it was. So.
Yeah, and we've already kind of had a review at one of our earlier shows. You know, episode 5, 6, something like that. We started reviewing the previous guests, and I guess we'll go all the way back to the beginning and the things that Dr. Future was talking about, and how I mentioned earlier, he got me into the ayahuasca stuff, and I started researching that, even though he discouraged it. But he was talking about specifically the enzyme that blocked you from essentially, going too far into your mind, getting too introverted. He was talking about the enzyme that blocked that in your system, even knew like the abbreviation for it and stuff. And that from him, and then the guy that was talking about that story where the guy was praying to idols or whatever in his attic and trying to make it come to life, I thought that was really cool, because I believe in the power of thought to create living things.
I think that might have been David Weatherly.
Maybe.
But the tulpas, I believe.
Yeah, tulpas.
Okay,
that's
David
what they were
Weatherly,
called. Yeah.
Which we were talking about, the black-eyed kids.
Right, and from him, and from Prime, I always love to hear... people's voyages in the mind and stuff. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And
we kind of get to hear that every day.
But. Yeah, and when someone talks about either visions or dreams, it gives you a real introspective into their personality and stuff. It's real personal sometimes to hear someone's dreams or visions.
Right.
So that's pretty cool to me. Let's see. Yeah, and then my brother, of course. Yeah, like we talk like every time we're together, we talk about something like that or just what's current. And he's really big on Fugazi right now, and he's been researching stuff about that. And and then after him, the two that we had on about the hauntings, I love, my favorite part is hearing about apparitions. I like to get straight down to the apparitions and start talking about that and the experiences. And through all four guests focusing mainly on the paranormal.
We had Tim Yancey.
Yeah.
We had Bill Bean. They were the ones that mostly about violent hauntings. David Weatherly about the black-eyed kids.
Right.
Let's see. Who else would have been? Would it have been?
and with the exception of the Black Eyed Children episode, all of those suggested to me that you had to have some type of shocking event, traumatic event in your childhood for you to be able to experience things as apparitions and stuff like that. You know, I think that everybody will have the potential to experience something like that, but it's all was heightened and elevated by their traumatic childhoods.
Yeah, it was more kind of like with what Tim Yancey was talking about with that people come in to an environment and their lives are already in a state of turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
So that kicks things up.
Right.
Inside the negative house.
The negative swell of energy attracts more demons. Such.
Right.
And and after them, Adam Go Rightly's two visits. I love that, and it is lot of information about Charles Manson, Montauk, and I didn't really ever know much about Montauk. I just had an idea of what was going on there, and that's it, you know. So he kind of gave light to those, and your most recent guest before this one,
Scotty Roberts,
talking about the Bible and relationships in Egyptian.
What was so weird, and so we didn't plan that with Scotty Roberts. You know, we talked about the whole 33rd degree parallel thing.
Yeah,
then the next show,
The next show,
he talks about the 33rd degree parallel. Just mentions it completely out of the blue.
Yeah,
and a funny story. And you were there with me when this happened. We were going to lunch the next day after we talked to Adam, not Adam Gorotley, but Scotty Roberts, and we were pulling around where the Burger King was on the road, and there's a fire truck sitting there in the parking lot. It said engine number 33.
Yeah, and then we started discussing how you were only noticing 33 now because it was on your mind. It's like that movie 23.
Right.
I don't know if you ever watched that before.
Like, yeah, the number 23.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a synchronicity thing.
Yeah.
I'd say probably, I'm not really going to sit here and say that I have like a favorite guest, because I think that they all bring something to the table.
Right.
I think that I've tried to, with the show over the last year, or almost a year, we started in March,
mm-hmm.
but I've tried to have that kind of balance between the supernatural stuff and the conspiracy stuff, but I kind of feel like we haven't talked a lot about the conspiracy stuff as much as the supernatural. It's kind of more geared towards it.
Slightly. I don't know. Yeah. You do talk a lot of politics. I don't know if
you
realize it, but it happens a lot.
It's true. And also, too, you know, I've had on, we've had on guests that are coming more from, like, kind of the alternative Christian world. And then we've had, you know, just kind of guests that I guess
neutral,
come from, are neutral or the kind of the new age kind of stuff.
That's good.
And I want to get more of that. Next time, we should be having on our actually first female guest, who is also a haunting survivor. And we've talked about her many times, but she just had so many bad luck trying to get her on. And just several things that happened.
Right,
That we had a board explosion. And so, you know. So we'll probably have her on next, you know. Cross your fingers.
A board explosion? Is that what happened?
A board
Adam?
Explosion.
You're just tweaking knobs over here and it's...
Well, man, I want to thank you for doing this with me.
Yeah, no problem,
and,
dude.
We'll be gone for 3 weeks. We enjoy the holidays. But, we'll be back in January. And
everybody should also know that Adam feeds me dinner every time I come
over.
That's
right. He gets the cat food spaghetti, as he calls it.
It only smells like cat food when he heats it up at work.
All right, man. Well, you got to get some more girls listening to the show, okay?
Yeah, we need more of a female presence.
Yeah, we got to get like the...
Some haunted hotties.
Conspiranormalettes or whatever.
Hey, I could do that, man. Just let me get some money saved up.
All right. Well, let's call it, man.
Word up.
And I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back in 2013 if the Mayans let us.
If we're all not living in caves and like sheep and stuff to survive,
we can still do like the show in like Morse code or something. All right, man. Well, take us out, Luke.
I guess with more beatbox. We didn't really plan that.
All right, join us next time on Conspiranormal. Normal.